Today is a special Valentine's edition of The Reluctant Therapist. Elizabeth is here to talk about love.
Yes, I am.
Hello, Elizabeth.
Hi, Brian. How are you doing?
Excellent. How about you?
I dressed for the occasion.
Yes, you're wearing pink. It's lovely.
Do you like it?
Yes.
I was in such a great mood when I came in, but then I realized there are a lot of cynics at this station. Love cynics. Maybe my pink overwhelmed them, but when I started talking about Valentine's Day and what people's plans are and how they celebrate love, I got love is just a commercial notion. What are you doing? Nothing. And so I don't know. I'm starting to feel a little less enthused about my Valentine's theme. So what are your plans for Valentine's Day?
I currently don't have any plans.
Okay, so another cynic then.
Taking life one day at a time.
Oh, what does that mean exactly?
It means I didn't make any plans yet.
All right, so hopefully in the next hour or 50 minutes, then you'll be inspired. Maybe some people will call in with good ideas that are simple, not too complex, and you'll get inspired to shine your love light.
Yes.
Okay.
Sounds good.
So part of my Valentine's Day or love theme for this week was that I found a mixed CD tape that my husband made for me because we are of the 60s, 70s, and 80s. I won't give our exact decade. So making the mixed tapes was a big thing. And so I got really excited listening to these songs that my husband put down, these love songs of our relationship. And I thought, you know, that's like the perfect, simple gift to give someone is still the mixed CD. I don't know how you do it now with iPods and everything. How would you do that? Send your love music.
Make a mixed playlist, I guess.
A playlist?
Yeah.
And then you download it onto their computer or something?
Something like that. You could burn a CD or maybe email it.
Oh, email. There you go. Maybe you could Skype the videos to someone. We just have to find the modern day version of mixtapes because they've always been such a popular way of showing your love.
Right.
Yeah. Well, today I am still going to stick with my love spirit. I don't care how cynical all of you are, because love is a really important part of our, you know, daily mental health and well-being. I mean, it's been the theme of the show. It's the theme of my work. I'm a marriage and family therapist by trade. And this is your 50-minute hour. You can call in and share your thoughts on the subject or anything else that's on your mind. Our number here is 805-781-3875. This is your conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. But I have to say, in full disclosure, that I kind of rock the love thing. So I think that's one of my, but it'd be one of my secret talents. Maybe because I've had the benefit of a few things. One, my husband allowed me the freedom to be the emotion worker in our house, that I was able to devote a lot of time to nurturing love in our family and planning dates and setting up fun things and really focusing on our relationship for a long time. I mean, we've been together 32 years, so I've had a long time to think of fun things to do. And you have to have the freedom and time to make love happen in your life. I mean, it's like making a date for exercise or making a date for, you know, getting your homework done. You have to make a date for improving the level of love that you have in your life. And a lot of times the way we've set up our lives prevents us from actually getting to follow through with the things that matter. The other benefit I've had is a great role model. My parents have been together for, I don't know, 150 years, 50-something years, but they've spent a lifetime devoted to each other. And although there are things about their relationship interactions that I probably wouldn't want to mirror, what they have given to me and to my siblings is longevity. They've showed us how you stick it out through thick and thin, right? Through good and bad, sickness and in health. And those kind of models are invaluable, because what we understand about long-term loving relationships is that they have the highest chance of success if you have long-term loving relationships in your family history. We are a product of our parents, good and bad. And so one of the best gifts you can give to your children is a long, healthy relationship. And you know, it's funny because we have really high expectations now in 2013 of what a healthy relationship looks like. And I think one of the things that makes me sad is that we put such a high level of expectations on what it is to have love in our lives that we've tended to let go of what would be seemingly really healthy relationships for minor infractions, right? For things that really aren't relationship ending, but we believe that we should have more, or we see images in the media of people seeming to have it all, or have more romance, or have more sex, or have, you know, better conversations, and then we toss away something instead of working with what we have. But what's troubling is that for people who don't come from homes with good role models, they tend to quickly give up on love and then kind of pass that inability to sustain love in their lives down to their children. So I think one of my goals today, if I had a goal, would be to share some of the tips about how to find love and to sustain love in our lives, and maybe to overcome some of the hurdles that we tend to come across. And I'm sure you probably have a few ideas of your own of what sustains a long-term relationship. I'd love to hear from some of you with a long-term marriage. If you can beat my parents 50 years, what's been your trick? Our number here is 805-781-3875. So let's talk a little bit about what attracts us to relationships and really what love is all about. Because what's difficult in our culture is that we use love for a lot of different experiences, right? Brian right now is loving his latte.
Yes, I am.
And some people, you know, love music, or you love what you had for dinner, and then you love your pets, and you love your friends, and then you love your spouse. And there's this whole spectrum of love that we, you know, we use the same word to describe a lot of things. And then there's a nuanced way we say love, right? I can say, hey, I love you, Brian. He's like, yeah.
Yeah.
Love you back. You can say that. Feel free.
Love you too.
And then there's the real serious, you know, I love you. And how do we make sure we're saying I love you with just the right intonation? You know, this moniker of love we throw out there covers a lot of bases. So I'm going to start with the love that we usually associate with Valentine's Day, and that is romantic love, intimate love. It's the love, I think, that tends to get us the most confused on how it all works. So here are the three main pieces of love, intimate love. It starts with lust, it moves to attraction, and if you really stick with it, you grow into a long-term lasting love, which is the attachment phase. And the lust phase is really the shortest phase. It actually can happen within 90 seconds to 4 minutes. Because every time we meet someone, the very first thing, no matter if it's a male or female, old or young, ugly or beautiful, whatever this first meeting is, the first thing our biological brain does is determine whether or not we want to have sex with this person. First thing. So lust is that first stage. And if we look at someone and all of our signals tell us, oh, yes, this is someone I'm attracted to, we are in what we call the lust phase. And the lust phase is marked by our adrenaline rush. Our hands get sweaty. Our mouth gets dry. Our heart starts to race. Our armpits start to sweat. And the thing that's tough about the lust phase is that it also mirrors the same way we feel when we're being chased by a wildebeest or in some sort of danger. So that same sensation we have when we're in danger is the same sensation we have when we first experience lust. And so sometimes it's hard to discern which feeling we're having at that time. Hey, Blake, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi.
Nice to talk to you today. Thanks for taking my call.
Always.
Interesting topic. I think I might, as I was listening to you, I think it might be one of the cynics you're talking about.
Oh, no, another cynic in my air.
Well, maybe not. But okay. I sort of come from the school that luck is involved in finding true love, you know, very often. It's something that you can't plan, you can't manufacture.
Nope.
So I think that is part of the ingredient in true love, but also being at the right place at the right time, going along with the luck, and taking risks, not going through life with your head down, you know, being an observer, trying to, you know, find people that you think you might be attracted to. But I find it interesting, this might be the cynical part, but I think finding true love that we think of the conventional definition of is difficult to articulate that feeling that you have when you find it. Mm-hmm. And I think sustaining that over the years is also rare.
Absolutely.
So I respect you, Paris, for their ability to do that, but I think that's a big challenge with all the hurdles that we face in life, I think one of the reasons that love possibly fades through those long years is the people, the couples involved, might not have known each other as well as they thought when they initially got together. Thinking maybe your parents had a lot more in common, you know, than many people do, and that's what sustained their relationship. But so that's my initial thoughts.
Well, and it's great because you touched on a lot of areas where I wanted to kind of go today. So I'll try to back on a few of them. One is the idea of how we choose our mates today. And I think one of the things that's changed in the 50 years, you know, since my parents first started courting, is that we are much more fractured in our lives. You know, my parents grew up in towns where they knew each other's friends and knew each other's families, right? They had some history. So they come from a homogenous background. They had similar education, similar family values. And as much as we want to think that we've progressed and changed, those like values in relationships tend to really help when we look at long-term success. So yes, now we don't tend to have the luxury of sharing the same childhood backgrounds or the same similar experiences. But what we have morphed into is that people today are looking at like education levels and like intelligence levels as their foundation for attraction. Not as much so for just pure, you know, physical attraction, although surprisingly, that's still number one on the mate selection lists that they do today. So I think we don't spend as much time getting to know each other. The average courting time is like 18 months to 2 years. Statistically, we find that people have to know each other for 5 years to really have a solid foundation and have all the strange come up. But I think the other piece, the most important piece that you brought up today, was about the luck. And the willingness to take risks, because there are no guarantees, you know, that someone's going to go 50 years or things aren't going to happen in your life, illness or change of, you know, fortunes or change of life situations that really make it difficult for the relationship to go on. So there is a little bit of luck that the world kind of stays the course for you. But the other part is being able and willing to risk having your heart broken or being willing to risk that it may not last a lifetime, because until we're ready to risk and fully invest ourselves in another person, we never really get to the depth of any sort of long-term relationship, even if that relationship's only 5 years or 10 years because something happens. Unless we risk and really fully go into it, we never really experience the true joy of love.
True, very true.
I
like the history part you talked about, having a history with the person that you first meet. And that makes a huge difference.
It does.
You know, many years ago, probably more so than now, as you mentioned, but I think that's also a big piece.
I
possibly am a cynic. I don't know. Who knows? But anyway, I kind of think that Meatloaf had it right when he did the song, Two Out of Three Ain't Bad. I think if we get two out of three, maybe we might have the true, true, true love, but two out of three ain't bad. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. And, you know, it's funny because we're going to talk about different love styles, and one of the social science love monitors or love triangles looks at three aspects of love as having passion and having intimacy and having commitment. And, you know, there's marriages that go on for 50, 60 years that are really just have the commitment left after 60 years. But sometimes that's enough to make it a journey worth taking. So I appreciate your call.
Is. Yeah, that was a very interesting topic, and I think it's going to be a good show.
Thanks for calling in, Blake.
Okay, listen. Bye.
Bye-bye. Hi, Karen. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Well, you asked about what somebody might think of makes a lasting relationship.
Yeah.
My husband and I just celebrated our 40th anniversary of our first date.
Congratulations.
And thank you. And we didn't get married for 7 years after that. So we spent a long time courting. But in our vows, we made it really important that we would support each other's differences. Mm-hmm. And so that when we grow together, we can also be our individual person. And it would keep us from growing apart if we allowed each other to be who we were. And I think that's probably important in all relationships.
Absolutely.
But I would also say that through the years, what I have really found is that respect. mm-hmm. maybe even beats out love. Mm-hmm. You never cross certain lines. You know your partner so well, and you know what could really hurt them. And when you get into the heat of a battle, and you're going to get into some heated battles, you just cannot cross certain boundaries. It's a deep thing to be respectful to another person and never touch something that is so untouchable in them. And so I think that beats love, really.
I think, and I also think the respect, or we can call it trust, or, you know, just that line in the sand, there are things that we don't say, right, that you can't take it back. And I think that comes with a level of emotional maturity. And I think that's one of the things that hinders modern day marriages, is that we as a society at this moment really lack a lot of social, personal maturity. And I think that's, if I see a trend with my young couples, it's that they have not reached a level of their own personal development, mm-hmm. where they're able to hold that line, right? That they're a little more adolescent in their fighting tactics or their conflict. And so they're going to say things, you know, I want a divorce, or I hate you, or things that you can't take back that cause deep wounding in a relationship. And I think that's a good point that you bring up.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if a lot of these young adults have witnessed that with their own parents.
Right.
And maybe it's a kind of an unspoken way of raising your children, that you just don't cross those boundaries, because, you know, the children know the parents too.
Right.
They know what they know. So I don't know if that's a learned thing, or if it, I guess maturity has a big a part of it. But my husband and I have never done that. I guess maybe because we were raised that way. I'm not sure.
I do believe in the model that gets passed along, that we really are a product of what we see happening. And that piece of maturity, you know, is really difficult to find if you haven't seen it done, right? It's hard to find it or develop it in ourselves, because if you just watch the media, if you get all your news from, you know, watching television or reading online or looking at magazines, we have a very adolescent idea about love and sex.
It's true.
Right? If we watch celebrities who fall madly in love and have these elaborate weddings and then, you know, get divorced after 42 days, we really idealize what's called the attraction phase of love. And the attraction phase biologically only lasts 6 to 30 months. So if you've met someone and fallen madly in love and gotten married, you know, 6 months after you met, because you're so passionate, well, at 30 months, when your biology of love starts to change, the instant feeling is, oh my gosh, I'm falling out of love, right? I've stopped feeling love for this person. Well, no, your relationship is at the transition point. But because we are so addicted to the idea of this high energy, passionate love, and we think that's what the ideal is, that as soon as people start to feel the waning of that biological rush of love, they believe the marriage is over and they bail. And so,
right. I guess the Waltons is just not as exciting today.
Right. But then, of course, talk to someone who's been married for, you know, 60, 70 years, and it's much more deep and true than, you know, 15 short-lived experiences. So I don't
know. Right, yeah.
We all have to find our way, Karen.
Yes, we do.
I appreciate your call.
You bet. Thank you.
It's 2:20, and you're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. We're talking about love today. You can get in on the conversation at 805-781-3875. We'll be right back to take your calls.
That number again is 781-3875. You're listening to The Reluctant Therapist on KCBX. Coming up at 3 o'clock today on the next Fresh Air, New York Times national security correspondent Scott Shane talks about breaking drone-related stories, including the revelation that President Obama personally approves the names on the targeted assassination list. Join us for Fresh Air at 3 o'clock today here on KCBX. Then at 4 o'clock, it's Marketplace. And at 4:30, All Things Considered. That's all coming up here on KCBX. You're listening to The Reluctant Therapist. The number again to call in is 781-3875. We are currently listening to the mixtape created for Elizabeth by her husband.
Yes, we are. I love this song. I love me some good organ playing.
Me too. It's great. So did this song... Did you have a relationship with this song between you and your husband first, or is it just something that he picked because he thought of you?
So the thing that's interesting about this song is it's by String Cheese Incident is the name of the band, and we came and saw them play here on at Cal Poly. I can't remember, a few years ago. And so this is actually the live version that was played at Cal Poly the night we saw the show. So how romantic is that? Not only is it a really cute song, but it was a romantic story. I'm so glad you found my mixtape. You can play some more. My husband will be so happy. It'll be my Valentine's gift to him. So we're talking about love and how we attract love to our lives and how we sustain life. And we talked a little bit about lust, that initial 90 seconds to 4 minutes where we determine whether or not we even have a sexual connection with someone. And then we move into that attraction phase when we realize, oh, this is someone I'd like to spend some more time with. And that attraction phase can last anywhere between 60 and 30 months. I mean, as I mentioned to Karen, that, you know, as a culture in the last 20, 30 years, we've really gotten into the idea that the attraction phase of love is what love is all about. And the thing that's difficult is that you can't sustain attraction phase. You actually don't want to, because biologically, it's really difficult on your system, because we release a lot of different hormones when we experience lust and attraction and love. You know, lust is fueled by our testosterone and estrogen, also the adrenaline that we release. But attraction phase also includes a lot of release of dopamine, which is that intense pleasure feeling we get where you don't feel like you need to sleep or eat. You just want to stay up all the time and look your, you know, loved one in the eyes. And then serotonin's also released, the excitement that we feel. It keeps us hooked on the person that we're attracted to. It causes us to think about them up to 85 times a day. And with texting now, who knows how often we're thinking about each other, right? Because you have that instant fix you can get. If you text and you get a text back and your heart starts to race again. And the thing that's interesting about the attraction phase is that it mirrors addiction in so many ways, that if someone comes into your office and starts describing all the ways they're feeling, can't sleep, not eating, staying up all night, obsessed with this other person, you would be hard-pressed to determine whether they had OCD or were on some sort of amphetamine, or if they actually were under the spell of love, because it reacts like a drug in our system. So although we do want to have doses of serotonin along the way to keep us boosted and interested in our relationship, to sustain that level of dopamine and serotonin really isn't healthy. And it also prevents us from moving to that next phase, which is the attachment phase, which is when you see someone who's been in a long-term, loving, committed relationship, weathered a lot together, you know, stuck with each other when you woke up for days and days and said, who are you and why am I here? But trusted that you would find your way back. I mean, that's when we talk about the long-term love of a relationship. It rolls like an ocean. You know, you come in and out of falling madly in love with each other. You have to sustain those feelings with faith that when you go through periods of time where you really don't remember why you are with each other, you have to trust that it's going to be there again down the road. The other thing that keeps long-term couples together is the community they build together. When you have children, you know, this is bigger than just the two of you, and your parents and brothers and sisters become really invested in that relationship and your community of friends. And when we start to look at our marriages and long-term relationships as bigger than just the two of us, it can help us to make it over some of the rough spots in our life. Hey, Charlie, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Okay, Charlie Blair.
Hi there, Charlie.
Yeah, anyway, I've listened to you. You know, there are three Greek words that are translated as love.
Okay.
Eros, the erotic,
yep,
lust type. Erotic, the fidelitas or faithfulness, philios, philios, the brotherly love,
mm-hmm,
and agape, which is sometimes translated as charity.
Mm-hmm. Or godlike love.
Agape, yeah.
Yes.
And lasting love embraces elements of all three in various balances.
Exactly.
The other is my parents had a very long respect, and they had respect, and I think one of the major things that kept together, my dad admired and respected my mom's intellectual and such achievements. Marriages I've seen break up is where the husband has been jealous of the jealous and resentful of that. And the other aspect, I think, is Lori Lewis hits you the idea of the luck factor. you don't choose whom you love. Love chooses you.
Well, and I love that part, too, because I think that when we put our best energy out into the world, and not to use kind of woo-woo terms, but when we are in a place where we're giving off a positive energy, we will attract to us the right person for us. And I think that we, in a lot of ways, inadvertently block good matches into our life because we're uncertain or we're cynical about love or we feel like that we don't deserve love. And I think there's some things that we do to kind of block our love luck inadvertently. And I think that it's important to understand that when we talk about attraction, you know, what attracts someone to us, 55% of that attraction is our body language. 38% of the attraction is the tone of our voice and the speed of our voice. And only 7% is exactly what comes out of our mouth. So we really are biological beings in so many ways that what attracts us to another person is this kind of air about them, this confidence. And it was fascinating because there was a study that was done about women and who was attracted to them in certain social situations. And you would think, you know, well, the prettiest girl always gets the, you know, best guy in the room. But what they found was it wasn't necessarily the prettiest girls that attracted the highest value or what they call prime mating candidates. And Brian's already rolling his eyes about being a prime mating candidate. But, you know, scientific terms. But what they found was it was the women who had the best flirting skills were the ones who were able to attract the highest value mates. And so there's a lot we can do with just how we present ourselves out in public to bring to us high quality partners. And, you know, by improving our intellect, by working on our education, by feeling athletic and, you know, and allowing ourselves to embrace who we are. It doesn't have to do with having the best or tightest body or the best makeup or greatest hair. It has much more to do with how you carry what you're packaged in. And I think that in itself can do a lot to help us in our short-term relationships and our long-term marriages. What do you think, Vaughn? What's on your mind?
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Enjoying your show, for sure.
Thank you.
Again, well, 3 points, I guess.
Okay.
Something to the effect of the parental love.
Okay.
As our cultures and our world evolves, I think we need to really recognize how the concept of God as a loving parent will help us to be able to be good parents ourselves.
I agree, Vaughn. I think that's a good point that there is, you know, a bit of faith that goes into being able to sustain a relationship, that we have to have faith that the other person that we're in the relationship with has the same values that we do, that is there for the same reasons. And I think it goes back to the amount of time we spend getting to know the person that we're going to spend the rest of our life with, you know, the time that we spend understanding if that we have similar backgrounds and we have similar goals and that we have similar ideas of what it looks like to live a life together, and having faith that the person you chose has that same outlook on life really helps in creating long-term success. So what are your ideas about love? What are some of the tips you have for a successful Valentine's Day? Because I said when I came in today, I was really excited to have my pink on. I'm ready to talk about all the small acts of love that go so far in creating really fun, exciting partnerships. We can share great love with our friends. But today we've been kind of focusing on that intimate love and what it takes us to sustain intimacy and how to bring intimacy into our lives. So if you have any ideas, call in 805-781-3875. This is a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we'll be back to take your calls.
You're listening to The Reluctant Therapist on KCBX, public radio for the Central Coast. Today on Wall Street, the Dow closed up 47 points. More on that and all the day's business news coming up on Marketplace at 4. Then at 4:30, on All Things Considered, President Obama will announce in tonight's State of the Union address that about half of the U.S. troops in Afghanistan will be home by this time next year. The U.N. Security Council is weighing new sanctions against North Korea after its nuclear test today. And wrestling gets cut from the Summer Olympics. Join Robert Siegel and Melissa Block at 4:30 for All Things Considered from NPR News here on KCBX. You're listening to The Reluctant Therapist. That number again to call is 781-3875.
Georgia.
This is another song from your mixtape, Elizabeth.
Yes, it is. I love tape.
One of my favorite songs ever.
Willie Nelson's version of Georgia. Mm-hmm. Oh, I do love this song. We could just play the songs and I won't talk at all. Because it's interesting how just hearing a few notes of these songs that are so special to me bring me back madly in love with my husband. And reminds me that, you know, the things we do during the day to remind ourselves of why we're in a relationship or why we're with the person we love really help to sustain the feelings, the good feelings that we have. I feel my serotonin rising just listening to Willie Nelson sing these songs. And, you know, that also makes me think of some of the other, you know, small acts of Valentine love that we can do. One is this idea of the playlist or the mixtape. Because I said, you know, each one of these songs, and Brian's just choosing them at random, as soon as I hear them, I am back in the place I first heard this song with my husband. I'm seeing his face. I'm thinking of nice things he's done and said. And it also inspires me to be a good spouse to him, to let him know how much I appreciate all that he's given to me. Sticky notes are another wonderful small act of Valentine's love. You can put a sticky note anywhere, one of the greatest inventions. Put them on the mirror, put them on the pillow. You know, if you're looking forward to a night out on the town for Valentine's Day or just a quiet dinner at home, you can build the anticipation of that by leaving sticky notes somewhere. Say, I can't wait to see you tonight at 5, or looking forward to rubbing your feet, or looking forward to seeing, you know, your pretty smile. Just little notes to build that anticipation so that we kind of release those hormones of love throughout the day, looking forward to being together again. Another tool that I love is the reminder box. That's for couples that, you know, have a little trouble through their life, or you've hit a rough spot, or going through a transition, to collect a box where you put your wedding picture and pictures of when you were dating, some pictures of fun in your marriage, pictures of your kids and friends that you care about, maybe ticket stubs from concerts or movies or some reminders of things. And so when you hit a rough spot as a couple, to go through that reminder box and look at these things, again, starts to trigger those hormones that reignite those loving feelings that we have. Also, I love the five-minute romance, because a lot of couples put a pressure on themselves to have date nights or get away for the weekend, or, you know, make sure that we go out for dinner and or go for a four-hour hike. And with all that goes on in our life, it becomes overwhelming trying to schedule these lofty sort of activities. And so I encourage you to do five-minute romance. Every day, set aside 5 minutes that you just spend together, not talking about the kids or work or anything, but just each other, or just sit in silence, or just make out, which would be my preference, but 5 minutes of something together. And, you know, for a lot of people, you can get a lot done in 5 minutes, right? But 5 minutes is all we ask, because that will turn the corner for a lot of relationships. June, you're on the air. What do you think?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Well, I was just really interested in your earlier comment about love being kind of like obsession.
It can be those attraction phase, yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've been married to my husband for 2.5 years, although we were dating for about 8 years before that. And I would say that we have a very solid relationship. We make each other laugh a lot, which is great. But, you know, I often have these feelings that I love my husband too much. And if anything happened to him, what in the world would I do, you know? Mm-hmm. And, recently I am doing my master's thesis, and, you know, that's a very stressful time in my life. And even though I'm making it through it, at the risk of diagnosing myself based on your earlier comment, mm-hmm. You know, that can kind of bring out the OCD in you for sure.
Absolutely.
And I feel like that feeling of I love my husband so much, too much, maybe has been very heightened during this time in my life. And I think it really kind of highlights for me the need for balance, mm-hmm. in a relationship, and the need for me to do things that make me happy in order to make our relationship more rounded.
Well, it's interesting because you bring up two big touchstones for me. One is, you know, you've at this point, after being together for almost 10 years, are clearly in the attachment phase. So although you still have those high feelings of attraction for each other, you know, you've moved to attachment, which is a more deeper, long, sustaining relationship. And to be honest, I get concerned when we start using therapy language, right, to describe, like, we think we're too enmeshed or we're too close. And if you talk to people when they do interviews with couples who've been together for 60, 70 years, what they say sustained them was that their favorite company was just each other. That was where they wanted to spend most and all of their time, that they would consider themselves completely involved in each other's lives. And the list goes on. And if you read the description alone, you would say, oh, this couple, you know, has a dysfunctional relationship. They're much too involved. And yet these are the interview words of couples that have been together 70 years. So I really question this kind of modern era idea that we can love our spouse too much. Yes, there is that line that we give up, you know, and kind of lose some of the things that we value, like exercise and spending some time with other friends or, you know, getting our work done. But I really challenge this idea that you can never invest your heart enough to the thing that you most care about. So I just challenge you with that idea. And then again, the idea of, you know, are we receiving love in such a way that we feel the love back from our spouse? Because I think sometimes we give and give and give of our heart, hoping that our spouse is going to give and give and give of their heart. And as long as it's reciprocal, then we tend to feel pretty healthy about the relationship. We get into trouble sometimes when we're giving and giving and giving, and our spouse isn't able to give the same level of reciprocity. But the idea of whether or not, you know, we can love our spouse too much, I would fight that, because I think if we're fully vested and our spouse is fully vested, we can never love each other enough.
Well, I really appreciate that, because that I really think that's how we feel, you know, and certainly me, I feel like I really could never spend too much time with him, you know, and I guess I never thought about that, but I guess there is kind of a stigma associated with that, isn't there?
Absolutely there is, because we have become a culture that's more divorce-oriented than marriage-oriented, right? We've been led to believe that 50% of all divorces end in divorce, but if you look at the statistics closely, the truth is it's 19%. If you follow a few golden rules to getting married, wait till you're 25, know someone for a minimum of 2.5 years, are college educated, have a family history of staying together. If you have those four pieces, you're at a 19% risk. Now, knowing that, I wonder how much that would change people about getting divorced. If you thought or knew that only 19% of all marriages end in divorce, how much harder would you work to keep your marriage going? But because we have this cultural story that half of all marriages end in divorce, we believe that the first moment we get into trouble in our relationships, that we're destined for divorce. Well, I guess I'm just part of that half. Oh, well. And that's backed up by this culture that goes, oh, well, you fell out of love. Look at Kim Kardashian, she couldn't make it work, right? So we have this very adolescent idea about marriage, and that hurts us as a culture, because people don't understand about vesting for a lifetime. They're too afraid. They're afraid they're going to get down the road and say, oh no, I made a mistake. This was the wrong person. So people bail really quick. But I just encourage you to surround yourself by people who have the same goals as you do, and see what a difference that makes in the quality of your relationship. Because the minute we start saying, am I loving someone too much, is the minute we need to start wondering who we're hanging out with, where we're getting our news.
Absolutely. I wonder, too, if you've found that it's often women saying that. And the reason I say that is because the modern woman is supposed to be independent and, you know, kind of free thinking, and we tend to overthink things, you know. So I do wonder if that's a woman thing.
I think it's a piece of that, but it's also we've put a really high expectation, as I mentioned before, on marriages now. We don't just look for a mate, we look for a soulmate. And that comes with a high premium. That means that each spouse has to, you know, be each other's best friend and confidant and workout partner and, you know, be all and end all, which works out wonderfully if you're both, you know, able to put that much time into it. That's 100% of our time. But if one person puts in more than the other, then the relationship gets off balance, and that's where couples get into trouble. So when we talk about balance, I think I'm more interested in how do we balance the amount of energy that both people put into their relationship, you know? So if you're both 100%, you're going to really have a good time. If you're 50, 150, it's going to cause some trouble in the relationship. But I encourage you to keep throwing your love out there and to encourage your spouse to throw all of his love back into it.
Great suggestions. Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling. Hey, Chris, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hello. I want to tell you that you sound great.
Thank you.
How I feel loved is that I'm walking down the street and my wife grabs my hand, wants to hold my hand, because in my experience, unless it's your 3-year-old daughter, a woman who wants to hold your hand walking down the street really likes you, probably loves you.
I love that you brought that up, because I did want to talk about the different love styles and love languages and how is it that we know that we're loved. Because one of the problems that I've seen pretty regularly with clients is this disconnect when it comes to showing our love for each other. One client came in and her husband said, I don't know what to do, because she says I don't love her and I'm not expressing my love and she doesn't feel it when I tell her that I love her. And every week I bring her flowers. I mean, I bring her flowers every Friday. If I didn't love her, you know, why would I bring flowers? How does she not see it? And the wife instantly popped up and said, you bring me roses every week. I hate roses. I like carnations. I've told you that for 10 years. I like carnations. So every week when you show up with these roses, I feel like you hate my guts, because clearly you're not listening to me. So we can love someone with all our heart, but if we don't love them in a way that they feel our love, it doesn't get us anywhere. So it's really important to find out from our spouse, how is it that they feel love? So for you, it'd be important for your spouse to know, hey, when you hold my hand, I really feel your heart. And so anytime you want to let me know you love me, grab my hand. And to share something that simple can be life-changing for a couple. So I appreciate you bringing that up, and I hope you get your hand held later.
thank you.
Thanks for calling, Chris. Some of the other ways that we show our love, some people like an act of service. You know, one husband will clean out the gutters or change the oil in the car as a way of showing his love. So if his wife understands this is the way my husband shows his love, she can learn to experience that as love and appreciate it. But at the same time, the same husband who likes to provide acts of service needs to understand that his wife still likes to get a gift now and then. Some people feel like a gift shows love, or time spent together. So although he's spending time changing the oil on the car or cleaning out the gutters, if his wife enjoys the gift of time, then he needs to, you know, make the time to go for a walk with her or sit in the couch and watch, you know, some TV or just be together so that she feels his love with her. This information comes from a book called Love Languages, or The 5 Love Languages, if you're interested in it. It's a really short book, an easy read, and it's full of great wisdom for simple ways that we can improve the quality of our love relationships. So what do you do to improve the quality of your love relationships? Or what's going on in your life? How is your love life? Does it exist? What's keeping you from going out there and bringing love into your life? It's 2:45. And you're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You get involved in the conversation by calling 805-781-3875. When we come back, we're going to talk about how do you know if you found the one and how to be a good mate. And I think we're going to hear another song from my love mix, right, Brian?
Yes, we are, Elizabeth. You're listening to The Reluctant Therapist on KCBX. There's 15 minutes left in the show, so Elizabeth has time to take a few more calls. The number is 781-3875. Here's a highlight from the KCBX community calendar. Singer-songwriter Bobby Joe Valentine will perform this Friday evening at the Atascadero United Methodist Church. Coffee, desserts, and childcare are available for this fundraiser for youth services projects. For all the details, go to the community calendar at kcbx.org. Coming up at 3 o'clock today, it's Fresh Air with Terry Gross, the Peabody Award-winning weekday magazine of contemporary arts and issues. It's one of public radio's most popular programs, other than The Reluctant Therapist. That number again is 781-3875. Call in to talk to Elizabeth.
So I think I told you, Brian, that my husband went to Cal Poly. He's a rocket scientist. And so our courtship was right here in San Luis Obispo. And I can't tell you the afternoons we spent listening to the Allman Brothers and hanging out in the nice, warm San Luis Obispo sunshine.
Nice.
Just great memories.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, it looks like we have a couple calls. Brian's going to answer the phone. If you'd like to call in, please be patient because it's just Brian. He's trying to chat with me and answer the phones at the same time. So hang in there. Our number is 805-781-3875. All right. So a couple of people didn't want to go on the air, but they wanted to know about whether or not they found the one. You know, how do I know? I don't want to invest all this time, right? Our life is short. I want to make sure that I've found the person that's my good match. And how do you know that? So here's a few ways that we know that we've found the one. And the very first way we know is that when you're with this person, it feels like home. That simple. You just feel like you're home. And if you've ever felt that way, you'll recognize what I'm saying. Another one is that you appreciate each other's strange, and that would be non-therapeutic. That's my verbiage. But you know what I'm talking about. It's easy to love people for all the ways they're great, right? We all have reasons that we're lovable. But when you really feel like you've fallen in love with someone on a deep, deep level, you love even the weirdness about them. You love their strange. You love their dark side. You kind of get all the things that make them neurotic and silly and fun. Because all of us are a bundle of contradictions, right? I'm a bundle of contradictions. I'll be on the air and I'll be chatting with you and we'll have these important, deep conversations. And then I'll get in the car on the way home and someone will cut me off and, you know, I'll yell out my window. I mean, we all are many things throughout the day. And when you find someone who even their strange messiness, their contradictions, you still love and appreciate, then you know you might have the one. When you start to act as a we instead of an I, when you're making decisions or plans for your future from the we perspective, you may be with the one. Key to being with the one is that you manage conflict well. Because there's a lot of people we can have a fun relationship with. You might have had those really fiery, hot, passionate relationships. You might have had just the comfortable friendship relationships, right? There's a lot of different ways we can be in relationship with others. But for the one you're going to do the long haul ride with, to be able to manage conflict well, being able to really come to each other with grace and forgiveness, to be able to have an argument and find your way back is a really important way of knowing that you're with the one. And then finally, when you're with the one, the relationship just works. It just is. So what do you think? Michelle, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, Elizabeth. I'm enjoying your show. I've only listened to it a couple of times, so I'm really enjoying listening to what you have to say and your folks that are calling in.
Thank you.
Well, I have a comment, really, and that is that I think it's so important that we remember how love is something that we create. It's
yes.
A very creative process. There's not a prescribed way. It's different for different people, and that's part of it. Somebody, if you can figure out the ride that is for you, and so that's what my comment was.
Michelle, you're breaking up a little bit. I do appreciate your comment because I think that we don't talk enough about the work that goes into sustaining a relationship and that it doesn't just magically happen, that we have to wake up every day and make a choice to be in that relationship, to remind ourselves while we're in that relationship. And it's interesting because I mentioned earlier that when we're in the attraction phase and the hot biology starts to kind of wane after 30 months, it's easy to feel like, oh no, I'm falling out of love, or love just died, it just went away. And, you know, really rarely, if ever, does love just die and go away. Love withers because we stop tending to it and paying attention. And one of the mistakes that couples make is feeling like that once they've gotten married or they've made a commitment, a long-term commitment to each other, that they can now put their focus on their career or their friends or their workouts or their children. And once you take your eye off of your marriage, it can wither very quickly. I like to talk about it being like a plant that we have to nurture, and that if we don't water it and tend it and give it enough light and air and attention, that the plant will wither, and our marriages are the same. and that we do choose that. Think about your day. I mean, I'm listening to these love songs that my husband put on a tape for us, and I'm feeling great love for him. But, you know, a few hours from now, he can do a few things to really tick me off, and I could turn around and go, what am I doing with this guy? You know, we can flow in and out of those feelings. Love comes in bursts and waves in our system, and it might be sustained by love and respect and commitment to each other. But those feelings of love and I'm really connected to you, you know, we have to nurture those. Those come in and out of our lives. So we do have to put the work in. What's on your mind? You can join the conversation at 781-3875. Dave, you're on the air. What's on your mind? Hi, Dave.
I was wondering what you are so reluctant about.
Why I am the reluctant therapist?
Yes.
Well, I think, you know, this all started as a little bit of a protest. From what I saw was a lot of people who were normally okay and going through maybe a rough patch in their life or having a tough time with transitions, going in to seek help and being diagnosed with mental health issues that were much greater than really what brought them into therapy. And then they were starting down these paths of getting overdiagnosed or maybe ending up on meds or, you know, bouncing from therapist to therapist. Or what became worse for me was that they started talking in therapy language. You know, I'm dysfunctional or I'm enmeshed or, you know, I'm codependent. And just we start becoming these labels. I'm, you know, OCD and I'm anxious, I'm depressed. Once we start talking about ourselves with these labels, then we stop, you know, the growth of our lives. We start becoming those labels. And so I think I became reluctant when I started seeing my profession move away from, you know, really working to build the strengths and creativity of our clients and started to pathologize or medical model our clients by just looking at symptoms and diagnosing. So that was kind of the beginning. And then I started thinking that, you know, there are a similar group of things that bring people into therapy or things that we worry about, right? Am I normal? Do I have enough sex? Do I communicate well? How do I find love? And it was like similar things that we grapple with as humans. I grapple with the same things on a regular basis. And so I thought we need to talk about this as a group instead of having it happen in a 50-minute session behind a door, you know? So I felt like I was reluctant to kind of act like the information about good mental health was a secret you needed to seek out from a professional. When we really have these inherent answers in ourselves, we just need to be able to talk about it and compare notes. Does that help?
Thanks.
Thanks for calling in. Have a good day. Hi, Mark. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hello, Elizabeth. I want to talk from my experience as someone who discovered love after being out of love in a marriage for 30 years. I was really so overwhelmed by love, I really didn't know what to do. and slowly but surely, I've been able to participate in that and show up for that and receive that love. And I'm 63 years old.
I wanted to talk about
the experience of someone who may not be in their 30s or 40s and just starting out in life and a marriage.
Well, and so how is it you know when you're in love? What made you know, I am feeling love?
Well, I don't know about in love. Mm-hmm. I think love has to do with a combination of the passion, mm-hmm. and then when you find yourself also compassionate,
yes.
showing a lot of empathy and receiving empathy
yes.
from the other person, I think that's really it for me.
Well, and it's interesting. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think it. At this point, at 63 years old, it's a spiritual exercise as well as anything else.
I agree, and I think it should be a bit of the spiritual at any age, because when you talk about compassion and empathy, you know, because I've talked a lot today about, you know, the heat and the biology and feeling connected and in a little bit tongue-in-cheek, because that is just kind of the heat of the love. But when we talk about long-term, really something that makes us feel confident in ourselves is when we know there's someone who's got our back. Right? Someone who cares for us and wants to hear our story, who wants to witness our journey with us. And it's really, for me, love comes down to that much more than any of the other heated biological pieces. But to have someone who is witnessing my journey and on a daily basis saying, hey, I see you and I see what you struggle with and I support you and love you on that journey.
You talk about commitment. I think that can be overstated. Mm-hmm. I think that commitment can be good, but commitment can result in a lot of hurt and anger. And really, I'm sure I stayed too long in the marriage that I was in, 30 years. Mm-hmm. And when I left, I felt that, that was absolutely the thing I should have done way before.
Well, I'm so happy that you found something great at 63, and I hope you celebrate Valentine's Day with full
Indeed.
Gusto. Thanks for calling in, Mark.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And as we close up today, I wanted to talk about a couple of the things that might keep us from enjoying love. And one of them is poor communication skills. And we talked about that last week. And I think we might revisit it again over the course of the next few weeks, because it really is key to most of our relationships, is how we communicate our feelings, our expectations. Another reason we get in trouble with love is that we have unrealistic expectations, that we think we're supposed to have celebrity love and relationships all the time. Having poor role models. Again, if we're looking for celebrities as our role model for good marriages, there's very few out there that have been a good role model. But if you can find people in your life that you admire and talk to them about what makes it work, or kind of emulate that, or talk to your parents. They may not have the interpersonal relationship you'd want to have, but there's something about the stick-to-itiveness that worked. One of the things that really gets us into trouble is sending mixed messages. And I kind of wish I brought it up sooner, because it's such a core piece of our relationships. When we expect our spouse to be able to read our mind, we get into trouble. So a mixed message is when you walk into the room dead tired, exhausted, just wanting to sit on the couch and put your feet up, and you say to your spouse, oh, is there anything I can get you before I sit down? And if your spouse assumes that what you say you mean and says, sure, would you get me a beer? And then you explode at them. What? You want a beer? I mean, can't you tell I'm exhausted and I can't even make it through the day? You know, that's an example of a mixed message. Don't expect your spouse to read your mind. You need to tell them what it is that you want and need. Tell them how you feel loved. If you have a plan in your mind for Valentine's Day, share it with them, because our spouses want to be there for us, right? Assume that our relationships, our partners, our friends want to be in relationship with us. So help them be in relationship with us. And you can help them by understanding yourself and taking some time to understand what it is that makes you happy and how it is you feel love. And so I appreciate you listening in this week. I'm sorry we didn't get to talk to everyone, but I hope you'll call next week. We can continue the conversation about love all month. I know that Brian's looking forward to more love languages.
I can't wait.
I know. I think next week we'll talk about what it takes to be a good mate. Until then, you can get a hold of me through my Facebook page. Go to The Reluctant Therapist on Facebook, or you can email me at elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. I love to hear from you, and I appreciate all of you for calling in and sharing your thoughts and feelings, and I look forward to speaking to you next week. I think we're going to go out with a love song, right?
That's right. One of your favorites.
It is.
Pack your bag, something small. Take what you need and we disappear. Without a trace, we'll be gone, gone. The moon and the stars will follow the car. And then when we get to the ocean, we're gonna take a boat to the end of the world, all the way to the end of the world. Oh, and when the kids are old enough, we're gonna teach them to to the ground, not falling but rising like rolling around, eyes closed above the rooftops, eyes closed, we're gonna spin through the stars.